The first strategy for stress suggested by the stress model is to avoid stressors wherever possible. Don't manage stress when you can avoid stress. Stay away from situations that are stressful to you, and that can mean staying away from very big, blockbuster kinds of problems, or staying away from lots of little irritations. One of the things that we know about stress is that it is cumulative, that is, like weights on a scale, it adds up. One way to reduce your stress load is to take off a 100-pound stressor, or to take off of your shoulders 10 10-pound stressors. Avoid stress wherever possible. There are a number of things which I find stressful in life that I simply refuse to do. My wife, who is a professional shopper, she enjoys going to the malls, has near our home what is reported to be the largest mall in the world, the famous Woodfield Mall in Schaumburg, Illinois. This is a place that has over 400 stores on 3 different levels. And my wife has the map of that entire thing committed to memory. She knows exactly where to go. She loves going to Woodfield. She revels in shopping. She enjoys the push and the shove and the negotiating. I won't set foot in that place because I don't like the crowds. I don't like the parking problems. And one of the things that we have negotiated in our own marriage is to let her enjoy what she enjoys and to let me avoid what I don't. The second major point of the stress model is that stress, if it is to be stressful, must be perceived. It must be seen as a threat. In other words, if it doesn't bother you, it's because you have not perceived that it's a problem. Have you ever noticed at work or at home, when talking with someone and discussing a situation that has affected both of you, that the other person sometimes reacts very emotionally? He's very upset by this announcement or this change. And you're kind of taken aback. You're surprised because you don't think of it as any big deal. It hasn't affected you. It's rolled off your back like water off a duck. Yet this other person has internalized this event, has seen something in it that you just don't see. This person, therefore, is under stress because they perceive a threat where you have perceived none. If you don't think it's a problem, it's not a problem. If you think it's a problem, well, it is a problem. One of the interesting things that we see in some individuals is an almost paranoid response to common events. You say hello to them at work, they spin around on their toe and look at you and say, "What did you mean by that?" They're always looking at things with the most negative interpretation. They see things, it seems, in the worst possible light. It is, in fact, a behavioral pattern with them. It is a way in which they are set up to react to the world. And this perceptual set, as it's known, affects and colors everything that they encounter. Some people will see a couple, one white, one black, walking across the street, and they think nothing of it. Yet other individuals will react quite differently and be quite stressed and upset. One of the things that counselors and psychotherapists do is try to help these people restore some perceptual balance to the world and not to always assume the worst possible scenario. Now, perception of threat can be paranoid and unhealthy and abnormal, but perception of threat is also a normal response. We are told by the biologists and by those who have studied evolution and development of the human species that there are certain characteristics that equip our species for survival. In ancient times, when your great-great-great-great ancestors lived in the caves in France, and they heard a rustling in the bushes outside of the cave entrance, some of your ancestors may have thought, "Oh, good, UPS has arrived with our early Christmas presents," and went forth only to be eaten by a saber-toothed tiger. They perceive no threat. And in fact, that lack of perception led to their early demise. Other of our ancestors, having heard the suspicious noise outside, were aroused. There was a clutching feeling around the heart. Their breath started to come in shorter pants. They reached and got the club and, creeping forward, made the assumption that the noise was something fearful and dreaded. and there were saber-toothed tiger steaks on the grill that night as a result. Their normal fear, their normal expectation that if I don't know what it is, I'm going to assume it's a threat, equipped them for survival. It only really becomes abnormal when we are inclined to see everything as a threat and as a stressor. When we do, however, perceive things as a threat, whether real or not, we will kick off what is known as the fear response. The fear response is a set of about 80 different, specific physical and psychological reactions that are considered normal mental and biological reactions under conditions of threat. Think of a time when you thought you were alone in a room and then you heard a noise behind you. Someone had walked into the room and you were startled. What was your set of reactions physically and emotionally? What were your feelings? Think of a time when, without any warning at all, you were given a piece of genuinely bad news and the kind of sledgehammer effect that it had upon you. Think of a time when you were in a life-threatening situation, an emergency, perhaps it was a crash. Did you notice these kinds of reactions? A quickened heart rate? A quickened respiration rate? Did you have sweaty palms or other portions of the body that seemed to go into a sweat? Did you experience temperature changes that were dramatic and rapid, either becoming flushed and hot in some parts of the body or becoming quite cold, resulting from a shifting in the body of the blood supply and where it was going? Did you have a cramping reaction in the stomach? These are all known to be associated physical responses of people under stressful conditions. There are other reactions which you might not have noticed, but which did occur nonetheless. The pupils in your eyes dilate under stress. They literally open up to allow more light. Your hearing acuity, your sensitivity to sound increases. You actually hear and see better. Your skin will often tingle and you get goose flesh as you get a kind of sparking response, and the sensory receptors in your skin are more sensitive. What is actually occurring is that the little person in the command center of the brain, in a panic, is sending a message to the body saying, "Feed me information so I know what's going on." The perception of threat is kicking off a fear response, and the fear response is a survival mechanism designed to keep you alive. The survival fear response is the strongest set of physical and psychological reactions that you are capable of. Have you read the stories of people who do unbelievable acts of heroism under conditions of stress? Recently in my hometown, there was the story of the man working on his car. The car slipped off the bumper jack, the axle caught him in the chest. His agonized cries for help were heard in the house by his 110-pound wife. She went through the door. I don't mean she opened the door. She tore the door right off the hinges as she went out. She grabbed the car by the bumper, a 3,000-pound automobile, and lifted it off her husband's chest sufficiently so the neighbors could drag him from underneath the car. She performed an absolutely impossible event, because she was reacting to the strongest set of physical and psychological forces that the body is capable of exhibiting. Other kinds of changes also occur under stress. Adrenaline is pumped into the bloodstream. The hypothalamus in the stem of the midbrain secretes a complex series of chemical hormones known as corticosteroids, which affect heart rate, breathing rate, and so on, and are long-term regulators of biochemistry. Blood lactate levels change. What happens literally is that the biochemical soup that courses through our bodies changes in composition. And these changes are all designed to serve you. They are given to you by way of a response to a real or perceived life-threatening situation. But because they are so powerful in their impact, they can also do great damage to the body. They are not the normal chemical soup that regulates us. Under stress, they are so abnormally intensive in certain chemicals and in causing certain reactions that there can be wear and tear on our physical makeup. For example, we know that adrenaline makes the heart rate increase remarkably, sometimes at twice its normal speed. Well, if you had an expensive, highly designed automobile like a Mercedes, and it was a cold morning and you went out in the garage and you started the car, you'd want to let it warm up. You would be careful as to how you treated that delicate, well-designed machine. No one would go out into a cold garage on a cold morning and turn on the car and then race the Mercedes engine at top speed. That kind of wear and tear is just not smart behavior. In like fashion, the life-saving mechanisms that we're describing are designed to be used only occasionally. Once in a while, if you have to do that to get out of a tough situation, it's all right. But when we're in a life environment in which day in and day out, the body must respond to a continual stream of stressors, it is analogous to going out and revving up that engine and running it at full bore all the time. When you do that to an automobile, what tends to happen is that the pistons go through the engine walls. What happens in a human body is that the heart stops working and the blood vessels start breaking down. So try to avoid kicking off the fear response, except when it's really needed. Now let's summarize what the model has told us so far. First, all of us are encountering a continual stream of stress. In the kind of world that we live in now, the quantity and the frequency of those stressors have increased dramatically, putting greater load upon us. And so our first rule is avoid stressors. The second thing we've said is that whether it's a stressor to you depends to a large extent upon your perception of it being stressful. And how stressful you rate it is always an individual matter. So try not to perceive the world around you as always threatening. The third suggestion is that when you do accept, rightly or wrongly, an event as being a true stressor and perceive it as a threat, at that point you are going to kick off normal response mechanisms that are extremely powerful and which are primitive in the sense that the body and the mind view this as a potentially life-threatening, survival kind of situation. These powerful responses have to be handled very carefully to avoid long-term wear and tear on your physical and mental systems. Now, what else does the stress paradigm teach us? Why, that the purpose of the fear response is to mobilize us to take action. And what is it that you're being mobilized to do? What is this response mechanism trying to accomplish? It is trying to give you what we are all familiar with as the fight or flight response. You are being geared up to fight the stressor or to escape from it. Under conditions of stress, the body shifts the blood supply to the skeletal muscles to prepare them for action. Have you had days when you have just felt like you'd like to punch somebody right in the nose? Well, that's a normal response. It may not be socially acceptable. It may not be legally acceptable to go out and punch somebody in the nose. But it is nonetheless a biologically normal response as your muscles tense, ready to deal with what we consider to be an enemy situation. Recently in the papers, there was a story of a man who was fired in the U.S. Civil Service, and who waited for his boss by the elevator and then punched her in the nose, knocking her unconscious. Other times when we're under stress, we may feel like fleeing. We may want to run and to literally leave there. Sometimes we say to ourselves, let's take this job and shove it. I don't need this chicken outfit. Let's get out of here. We can't wait to get out of the office. TGIF. We don't want to be there. Some city dwellers spend every weekend in the country. There is this tendency, this desire, this natural wanting to get away from these kinds of stressful events. That, too, is a normal built-in mechanism, as is the fighting response. Since your body is mobilizing you to do something, our suggestion is a simple one. Do what the body wants you to do. Either fight the situation or flee from it. It has been found that when we respond and do what we have been programmed to do, that response will tend to discharge the psychic energy. It will tend to metabolize the biochemical compounds that are being secreted into our bloodstream. and in fact it gets it out of our system. The challenge in our kind of world is to find a way to do this that is socially acceptable. In 1875, in Tombstone, Arizona, a fellow goes to town and finds that his wife is being insulted by a bunch of bar bums. What's the response? Why, he fights. He pulls out his six-gun and starts shooting. It's an interesting fact that about 70% of all homicides in the United States involve family members. One way to deal with a stressor is to eliminate the stressor. Unfortunately, that's not socially acceptable behavior in the modern era, and so when we want to fight or when we want to confront or deal with an enemy, we have to do it in ways that are socially skilled, that are politically acceptable. And there are ways to fight. One of the major tools that has gained a lot of reputation and a lot of acceptance in personal development programs is the subject of assertiveness training. How can we be aggressive but in a positive way? That is, how can we fight and express ourselves and have our say and get it out of our system, but do it in a way that is not going to have a lot of negative kickbacks or consequences that we can't afford? We'll talk more about positive ways in which we can fight and express ourselves physically, verbally, emotionally, and directly confront the situation. What we are recommending to you is to not bottle up that response, but to discharge the energy that's been mobilized. When you feel like fighting, do it, but do it in the correct way. And we'll have some prescriptions to suggest in that area. The second major built-in response mechanism that uses this mobilized energy in response is the concept of fleeing. Get away from the situation. If, in fact, you're in a terrible job situation where day in and day out there is no resolution, there is no possibility of pleasing your boss, then look for a job somewhere else. You don't need that situation. Some people will come to the conclusion that the best thing to do with their marriage, as unpleasant a choice as it may be, is to divorce. While I'm not encouraging or recommending divorce action, I simply will note that for some people it is a way to get out of a relationship that they have been unable to rectify or reconcile any other way. Some people will reach the conclusion that it is better to leave the scene of World War III, which their home has become, than to stay in it. Again, the recommendation is to play into your own anatomy and your own psychological structures. Either fight the situation in some way that you find acceptable, or get out of that situation in some way that is constructive for you. What unfortunately has been happening to a great number of people is that they are not listening to their own body. They are not listening to what their mind keeps nagging at them to do. And instead of constructively fighting or fleeing, they are staying in the situation. They say, well, I'd like to leave the job, but I've got a mortgage payment, I've got three kids in college. I can't do this. I'm at such an age that I don't feel that I'd be as marketable in the job market. And so they don't fight the situation, and they don't leave it. They continue to stay in the situation and continue to not express their mobilized energy. What they tend to do is withdraw. While not actually leaving the situation, they withdraw inwardly. They go internal. Some of these people become OJRs, on-the-job retirees. They come in the morning, they smile, they nod their head mechanically, but everybody knows that Charlie died some 10 years before. They internalize and punish their body in ways that are not healthy. This is how a lot of ulcers begin. This is how a lot of resentment is built up. This is how a lot of the anti-job, anti-organizational creativity starts. This is how a lot of the passive aggressiveness and unhealthiness begins. Believe in yourself and in your being. Play into this biology, this model, which has evolved over millions of years. Either fight the situation or get away from it. Do not continue to live with it as it is. Do not withdraw into yourself. deal with it in the ways that your normal urgings are telling you you must deal with it. The other choice is to, as my grandmother used to say, stew in your own juices.